This is an iHeart podcast.
We're going to talk about culture war now and what we're seeing actually with all these riots across the country. I was about to say in LA, but across the country, Seattle, all over, everywhere. What's going on in this country? How is all this happening? So allow me to explain. Because actually, Walmart, or actually one of the Walmart heiresses, Chrissy Walton, she provided maybe the most wonderful possible example. Now, this woman is, by any stretch, the elite of the elite. Billionaire. High society. She hasn't flown commercial probably once in her entire life. It's private planes and five-star resorts and whatnot. And she came up in a country living in the wealth provided by the country. Her family made it big. The Walton family made it huge. Walmart, they made it huge, selling their goods in the United States of America. Now they're all billionaires. I forgot what the number was last time I looked. How many billionaires now are in the Walton family? It's just billions and billions and billions and billions and billions. Well, she takes an ad out, a full-page ad in the New York Times. Not cheap, by the way, but it's pocket change for her. Takes an ad out calling for people to protest, essentially. Rise up against Donald Trump. Now, this is what we're going to focus on here for a few minutes. What has happened? How did we get where we are? Why are we turning on the television, looking on our phones, and we see a new riot every single day? Well, it's actually not the bottom. It can be tempted because those are the animals in the streets throwing bricks, lighting things on fire, hurting people. It can be tempting to look at the socioeconomic bottom of the society and say it's their fault. And oh, don't get me wrong, they're responsible, but it's not actually their fault. Here's what happened in America, and here's why the culture war is a war that is still ongoing and will be ongoing. It's not that we lost the socioeconomic bottom in general. And remember, I want to clarify something. If any of this offends you, I don't care. In general, the masses, the socioeconomic bottom, they will go where the money is. They'll go, essentially, for lack of a better word, where they are led. They will go where they are led. They will group up and they will seek out money. They will seek out guidance from people. It's the elites in our country who have destroyed our country. And how did that happen? The education system. It all comes back to the education system. You see, what happens is, especially in wealthy circles, it's very, very common in wealthy circles for the children of uber wealthy people who made it, who really made it, the children will turn out to be vicious commies. Did you know historically how many communist leaders were rich kids? It's almost all of them. Did you know that? They don't put that on the brochure. When you read about things like Che, Lenin, Mao, you think to yourself, well, you know, they were obviously peasants who rose up and led the peasants in rebellion. That's almost never the case. They were all rich kids, every single one of them. Rich kids who grew up wealthy. And look, there's a million different psychological reasons we could probably dig into. But instead of choosing to better the lives of others, maybe it's the lack of challenges they had growing up, they seek out a purpose. And the bad ones land on communism. And they see their purpose in life as leading the unwashed masses in revolution against the very society that made them wealthy. Bringing me back to America's elites, it goes well beyond Chrissy Walton. You see, they took over the education system in this country, and most importantly, it's not that lower education, I'm talking about K through 12, it's not that that's not important, but most importantly, they took over higher education and the elite higher education. It's not just that they went to the local state school. It's not just Louisiana State. They took over Harvard, Yale, Stanford. And once they took over these elite institutions, I'm talking the professors, all communists, administrators, all communists, they would bring in all these children of privilege And they would tell them, you'd sit there day after day being lectured by this filthy commie professor. You have your privilege because you need to burn America down. Why don't you lead? And they led. They leave college, they get their inheritance, they get their vast quantities of wealth, and instead of using it to better the lives of others, to give back, even expand their businesses, they use it to burn America down. When you talk about the riots, when we talk, we always talk about communist street activism in this country, from LA to Seattle, wherever it may be happening right now. We always talk about how it's paid for and organized, and oftentimes it's paid for by you. The times it's not paid for by the American taxpayer, it's paid for almost universally by uber-wealthy children of privilege. And the ones who don't flat out stroke a check to this riot group or that riot group, they have the legal know-how, because they all have an army of lawyers and accountants, to figure out, how do I start a communist front group that'll do communist activism without it coming back on me? Have you ever wondered why we can't trace the source of the money in so many of these instances? We have the ultimate journalists now, internet sleuths who go through documents and they'll run into firewalls over and over and over again. Why? Because uber wealthy people with $1,000 an hour lawyers set up the nonprofits. The elites create these organizations who then have other organizations who have other organizations so they can funnel money, theirs and taxpayer money, to the animals on the streets. And that's why pallets of bricks show up almost on call as soon as they need a riot. And the elites guide these riots, encourage these riots. An heiress, a billionaire, taking out a full page article in the New York Times. Nancy Pelosi, as powerful as it gets, says things like this.
When, and I say this as a former party chair, when there is a gathering, a large gathering of people, the anarchists see it as an opportunity and they move in. So always have to be careful whether you see a burned car or broken window or whatever it is. It may be the exuberance of the moment, but it may be the anarchist setting in. I heard one of the former police chiefs of Los Angeles speak about this on Sunday.
That's Grandma Vodka, a couple shots in, doing the best she can. It's not Democrats, it's not our people, these anarchist types. Why do they do that? Why do they make excuses for them? Why do they call for more action and act as if they're part of the group like Chris Murphy did?
And obviously, this is a moment where we have to be on the streets all over the country to protest what's happening to our immigrant community, but more broadly to protest what's happening to our democracy. This is the most corrupt administration in the history of the country, and we are going to rise to this moment by being out there on the streets.
United States Senator, it's the most corrupt administration ever. We have to be in the streets, get in the streets. He mentioned the streets several times. We've got to get to the streets. Chris Murphy's never been in the streets in his life. But Chris Murphy understands he's leading a mob, an angry, violent mob of street animals. Therefore, he has to use the language of the angry, violent mob of street animals. He knows, in the end, he's commanding an army, for lack of a better way to put it, an army of freaks.
You
saw that drugged out lunatic right there. Oh no, not work. You saw the lesbian beside him with her eyes bugged out, lecturing somebody as always. Well, these are the Democrat constituents. These are the street animals. if you're asking, maybe you were sitting there as we played Nancy Pelosi and Chris Murphy. Maybe you're sitting there wondering, well, who would listen to those two freaks? Who's going to heed the call to take to the streets from these losers? Well, those losers. As we've talked about 100 times on this show, there are two different divisions of communism. Elite communist scum and street communist scum. The streets get their orders from the elites. The elites give those orders and they send out the army of animals to go do their bidding. That's why we are where we are. And before we wrap this up, I want to give credit where credit is due. Donald Trump has taken a lot of flack in the past for lacking humility in places where he screwed up. Look, I've given him crap in the past. COVID, all that other stuff, where he doesn't seem like he's going to own the mistake. Donald Trump is deploying the National Guard. He's sending in the Marines, and Donald Trump sounds like a man who has learned.
You have to remember, I've been here before, and I went right by every rule, and I waited for governors to say, send in the National Guard. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it, and they just wouldn't do it. It kept going on and on, got worse and worse. And in Minneapolis, that city was burning down 7 days, and I said, I don't care. This guy wouldn't call the National Guard, and we ultimately just sent in the National Guard. We stopped it, but that was after 7 days. And I said to myself, if that stuff happens again, we've got to make faster decisions because they don't want to do it. The radical left, it's usually radical left, and it's usually governors that are Democrat, and they don't want to call them in. They don't want to save lives. They don't want to save property. They don't want to call them in. I don't know what it is.
Good for Donald Trump. Good for him for cracking down immediately. We have quite a war ahead of us. All right. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll talk more culture war stuff, maybe some riot stuff with Bill Jacobson next. I love sleeping. It's always been one of my favorite activities. I'm just lazy like that. I enjoy sleeping. I take naps. I sleep 8-9 hours a night. But I will admit this, as you get older, it gets more challenging, okay? You never think that day is going to come for you, but then you wake up because your shoulder hurts. It never happens when you're 15. That's where Dream Powder comes in. It's natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate. But there's a bunch of special things in there, like melatonin and reishi and magnesium and things that have you drifting off to sleep. You sip a cup of hot chocolate before bed, you go to bed, drift off to sleep, and when you wake up, it's like you didn't take anything at all. You just slept all the way through the night. No getting up with the shoulder, you gotta pee, none of that stuff. You want some? Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly, sleep like a baby, and save a fortune while you do it. As we've discussed many times before on this show, that mass importation of foreigners by virtually every Western leader, don't think this is only an American problem, but we'll focus on us because that's what I care about. Mass importation of foreigners is not something that happens accidentally, and it doesn't happen because your liberal Aunt Peggy just has a big heart. It is a very focused effort to fill up your country with people who will, at the drop of a hat, burn down Los Angeles. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing. And this has been done to us on purpose by the Democrat Party. Bill Jacobson's all kinds of fired up about all this stuff. Joining me now, founder of Legal Insurrection and Cornell University Law Professor Bill Jacobson. Bill, it's not like an L.A. riot is some new thing. Those of us who've been alive longer than 15 minutes have seen it. But the waving of the Mexican flags, the throwing things at cops, it just chaps me.
Well, this is, in a sense, the sum of all our fears, that by bringing in tens of millions, and how many tens of millions, we don't know, of foreigners illegally into the country. We don't even know who these people are. We all saw the lines of military age solo men crossing the Mexican border under Joe Biden being welcomed into the country and bussed into the interior. When you do that, you are removing a fundamental aspect of sovereignty. The key aspect of sovereignty for any country is whether you can control your borders, whether you can control who comes into the country. And if you don't have a border, and I'm going to paraphrase Donald Trump from 2015, I was just looking at this the other day, 2015, he gave a speech in Phoenix during his campaign and said, if we don't have a border, we don't have a country. And that's really what it is. What the fight is going on is not over a particular piece of block in LA. It's over whether we have a country. And the Democrats and the governor of California don't want us to have a country. They want it to be a free-for-all. And mostly the Republicans and the Trump administration want us to have a country. And that's what this fight is over. This is not just about some esoteric notion of immigration law. This is very much about whether we are a sovereign nation anymore or not.
Bill, I'm going to ask a question that I don't want to ask because I'm afraid of your answer, but do we have a country still? A unified 50 states, United States? It's not as if, I don't know, there are going to be differences in parties. There are always differences in political parties. But when you have blue states, blue areas, including our largest, most powerful state, California, that have declared themselves to be a haven for foreign criminals, do we still have a country?
Well, I think we do have a country, but it's on the precipice. I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that. And it's been something that's been building for 30 years. If you look at what they've done to the education system, where students from kindergarten are indoctrinated into believing we are uniquely evil in the world. The United States is uniquely evil in the world. When you bring in people from countries who are hostile to us, when you do all of these things, you're trying to tear apart the country. If you wanted to destroy the United States, what would you do differently than the left has done for 30 to 40 years? So do we have a country? We still do, because we currently have an administration that's committed to it. But if Kamala Harris had been the president, I don't think we would. We could not stand four more years of a Biden administration flying people into our country. Half a million people from South and Central America were flown here by the Biden administration. Completely open borders where people are bused to the interior. So do we have a country? Yeah, but we're hanging on, you know, by our fingernails. And the next 2 to 3 years is going to determine what the future of this country is in to a much greater extent than I think anybody predicted. Illegal immigration has been a hot topic for as long as I can remember. But it went into hyperdrive under the Biden administration. It became destructive to an extent we've never seen before. I mean, and they're fighting it even now. They're fighting. Democrat senators like that guy from Maryland, Van Hollen, are fighting to keep criminals in the country. They're fighting to prevent the Trump administration from deporting people who have been convicted or credibly accused of crimes and who are here illegally. So, yeah, we have a country, but we can't take it for granted. Whether the Trump administration is successful or not in its immigration push will determine the future of this country.
Bill, what can, look, everyone's talking about the Marines being sent in here and Marines being sent in there. I realize there are legal things you can do as president, especially when it comes to the military, and things you cannot do. So that's your area, most definitely not mine. What can you do? Can you just send the Marines into the streets? What can you do?
Well, you certainly can do what Trump has done so far, which is federalize the National Guard, and you can send in the military to protect federal assets and federal personnel. You can't have the military engage in routine policing, routine policy enforcement, things like that. But he has the authority to do what he did very clearly by statute, and it's inherent in the executive power under Article 2 to make sure that the laws are faithfully executed, and he has the right to protect federal property and to protect civil rights and things like that. He can't start running LA, not that he would want to. He can't impose a military administration on the city of Los Angeles and run it day to day, but he sure can protect federal assets and ICE members from being lynched by mobs running rampant in the street.
Okay, As far as the immigration deportation efforts go, you just mentioned how critical it is, and obviously I agree with you 100%. Where is the Supreme Court in all this? To say they've been disappointing over the first 6 months of Trump's presidency would be putting it unbelievably mildly, but where are they in all this?
Well, they haven't really been anywhere so far. They have issued a couple of preliminary rulings and stay rulings on specific individuals when Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act, but that's not really what's at stake in Los Angeles. So the Supreme Court's weighed in a little bit, but they may be coming up upon the biggest decision, I believe, that they'll ever have to make. If a district court judge in San Francisco grants the state of California's request to issue an injunction against Donald Trump nationalizing this the National Guard and sending in troops to protect federal assets. If the judge does that, there's going to be a real crisis here, and I would expect the Supreme Court to step in. I'm not convinced the judge is going to do this. Oddly enough, we have, if you had to pick a judge in San Francisco, you probably got one who is more on the more moderate side. He's actually kind of, interesting quirk here. He's the brother of former Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. So Judge Breyer in District Court in San Francisco is the brother of the former Supreme Court Justice. He's not known, I don't know him very well, but from what I've read, he's not known for being one of these judges we worry about. And he didn't do what they wanted. They wanted one of these emergency orders like they've gotten in many places around the country without a basis. They wanted him on an hour's notice to issue the injunction, and he wouldn't do it. He said, I'm going to give the government time to put in their papers. They just put in their papers about 10 minutes ago, and he's going to hold a hearing. He's doing it the way judges should be doing things, not the way judges in many places have been doing things. So where is the Supreme Court? They're going to have to get involved if a judge enjoins the president of the United States, or I should say the executive branch of the United States, from exercising their control over the military. That would be a very serious and unprecedented, circumstance. And then we'll find out where the Supreme Court is on all these things.
Where are we at on birthright citizenship?
Well, that's going to be coming up soon for a decision by the Supreme Court. And I don't know how they're going to rule. My gut tells me they're going to not rock the boat. They are not going to want another situation like they encountered after they rejected Roe v. Wade, where lunatics are literally at their doorstep with guns incited by Democrats, where their homes are protested. So I don't know if they're going to have the guts to rule what I believe is probably the right way. There is a very good argument that the way we have treated birthright citizenship, that any woman who sets foot on our territory and then gives birth, that child is a citizen, even if the woman's here illegally, even if she's here temporarily, even if she's passing through changing planes at LAX, that person is now a citizen. I don't think that's the history of the 14th Amendment. And I don't know, though, if the court will have the guts to make that ruling. But we're going to find out. That would be the single biggest ruling to solve our immigration problem if citizenship were to be denied to people who merely by circumstance happened to be born on our territory. That would remove a lot of the incentive that the Democrats have to allow in unfettered illegal immigration. Because remember, even if they're the illegal immigrants themselves do not become citizens, their children do. So that is part of the Democrat goal. I'm old enough to remember when the Democrats were touting the concept that demography is destiny. And they viewed demography as favoring them, and they encouraged it. So I think the Supreme Court, I hope they have the guts to do it. I don't think they will, but I hope they have the guts to rule that birthright citizenship is not the way it's been handled the last century, and that that would have a huge impact on the incentives people have to come to this country.
How's things on college campus? Are we getting better on college campus anywhere?
I think in many ways we are on the surface. This past year, the encampments and the other, hooliganism were much more tame than a year ago. But I don't think that is anything more than a superficial change. I don't think the ideological corruption of our campuses has changed. That's too deeply embedded. That's a generational effort, or at least it's a multi-year effort. The first thing they did on most campuses, not all of them, but on most campuses, was clamp down on the hooliganism and clamp down on the intimidation that was taking place on campuses. So superficially, most campuses are better than they were a year ago. But unless we change the culture on campuses, unless we change the faculty on campuses, unless we get the faculty on campuses back to where they were 30 or 40 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago, professors identified roughly 60-40 liberal to conservative, which it makes sense. Academia has always leaned left. Now, the latest statistics are it's almost 30-1 liberal to conservative. The campuses have been completely purged of conservatives, or almost completely purged of conservatives. Those who are still there, like me, are hanging on, but they're not getting hired. So through attrition, through lack of hiring, there's been a purge of conservatives. And this is relevant to what's been happening on the campuses. There's also been a purge of pro-Israel faculty. It is close to impossible to get hired in the humanities and social sciences if you are either openly conservative or openly pro-Israel. And therefore, the universities cannot reform themselves. This is a point I make all the time. They cannot reform themselves because there is no internal opposition left on campuses. They have been purged through either firing or, more likely, through not hiring. And therefore, outside pressure, the sort of pressure the Trump administration is bringing, is the only way anything is going to change. There's no guarantee that will change things, but you cannot say, oh, Harvard will cure itself. No, it won't. You can't say that Cornell or Columbia or any of these places will reform themselves without outside pressure. They won't, because it's a monoculture, and that's something that we've got to address.
Bill, thank you. As always, I appreciate you. All right. Speaking of culture, dudes beating up women in sports. Riley Gaines has thoughts. Next. I don't know that there's a more appropriate thing to talk about than pure talk, as long as we're discussing patriotism here, because you know what Mack v. Sog is, right? Mack v. Sog, that would be the group of special forces guys in Vietnam. They went and dropped them behind the lines. Highest casualty rate in Vietnam. They died in droves. Actually, the majority of them died. They dropped them behind the lines where they fought in the jungles. And the CEO of Pure Talk did two tours with Mack v. Sog. How is there a mobile company, a cell phone company, that's this patriotic? No Black Lives Matter crap, none of that communist filth. Pure Talk loves the country. It's in their bones, and they'll save you money. Keep your phone, keep your number, or get a new phone. They have that too. But switch to Pure Talk. It's easy. It's fast. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Switch today. You know what's wild? You know, the dudes playing against women in sports thing has been, it's been around for a while. I mean, we've been harping about it for a few years now as we watched woman after woman get beat up, lose out on titles, things like that. But now it feels like the tide has shifted, doesn't it? At least in my circles, at least from what I can see in the media, it feels like the tide has shifted. However, there are still dudes beating up women in sports, taking their titles in sports. And there are still people who are so isolated in whatever weirdo freak bubble they're in, they're still defending the practice as if we all can't see what is happening out there. Anyway, Riley Gaines knows a touch more about this than I do because she was one of those women. Joining me now, host of the Gaines for Girls podcast on Outkick.com, which of course we love here, Riley Gaines. Riley, what happened with you and Simone Biles? When I was a kid, America's gymnasts were America's sweethearts. They were on cover of the Wheaties boxes, and now they're a bunch of tranny lovers?
That's what has been made very, very clear over this past weekend, Jesse. Man, I was so shocked. I'll walk you through how I found out about this. I was sitting at home on Friday evening. Typically, I'm on the road, so I was so excited to be home, a relaxing weekend. with my husband, with my dogs, with my horse. Friday evening, I get this notification on my phone from X. It says Simone Biles tagged you and mentioned you in a comment. I was like ecstatic at the thought of this because this is a woman I've looked up to for so long. I click on the notification and I had to read it several times, go back and forth to the profile to make sure this was the real Simone Biles, who had just called me a truly sick bully and a sore loser and compared my stature to that of a man in these tweets. I was so shocked, but that's the way the cookie crumbled, I guess. Simone Biles, I think, very quickly realized that we're not living in the year 2020 anymore. We are living in the year 2025. She did not receive a very welcomed reception based on these comments. And since then, she has now issued an apology. It took her several days to do such, but nonetheless, she apologized for getting personal with me. Went on to say, look, I don't want men and women sports. And for that stance, she's now receiving a lot of pushback from both sides of the aisle, Jesse. But that's what happens when you sit on the fence.
Riley, I'm not an athlete. You are. How much pressure are athletes under today, especially female athletes, to go along with this stuff? I remember all the UPenn stuff, which was horrible. And now we have brave people like Paula Scanlon coming out and talking about it. But female athletes face a lot of pressure to just shut up and go along with it and change in front of a dude, don't you?
That's right. An immense amount of pressure, both from your, whether it's internalized pressure, number one, or from your coaching staff, from your athletic director, from the sports organization itself, from your sponsorships. I would imagine that was a large part of what Simone was dealing with. She's sponsored by very large companies, corporate companies, things like Athleta, for example. But again, the response that she received, maybe this will be a large part in turning some of that around. Athleta, there was this big boycott movement this week where people said, look, I'm not spending my money on Athleta. This is a company that sponsors someone who body shames other women. So we will see what, if any of that shifts public opinion here, or more so shifts what we are seeing in terms of pressure being put on these female athletes from corporations specifically. I'll be interested to see that. But it is a lot of pressure that women are under, all while the leaders at the top are just glad it's not them. They're glad that they're not the ones getting publicly humiliated or publicly receiving these negative comments, leaving two women to catfight for, I think, 60 plus million people saw her tweet. They're just thrilled it's not them in the hot seat.
I've done a lot of dumb things in my life. Thankfully, 60 million people never actually watched me do or say any of those things. Okay, are you suing the NCAA?
I am. I'm suing the NCAA, myself, and about 19 other plaintiffs, 19 other athletes who have been impacted at the hands of the NCAA and their discriminatory, regressive policies. This is, of course, following that national championships where they put a man in the pool with us and a man in our locker room, all while reprimanding us if we even dared to question it. But it's not just swimmers. We have golfers, we have tennis players, we have volleyball players on this suit as well. So very excited to see where this goes, to see the outcome of this. Just received some good news that will hopefully be made public surrounding the lawsuit soon. But I believe these leaders need to be held accountable, as I was just alluding to. It's ultimately the leaders who are creating and enforcing these policies. Therefore, they are the ones who should be held responsible. It should be their feet that are being put to the fire. And I'm proud to be one of many who is involved in this effort.
Riley, I think we're going to look back on this time and just be mortified at what we allowed to happen. And I know right now there are a lot of parents with young ladies who are in sports, and they don't know what to do because they're in these jurisdictions. Your daughter goes out there, she busts her butt, early morning practices, you're driving 8 hours at these miserable soccer tournaments, putting all this time and effort in, and then they don't know what to do when she gets into a competition like that California track meet where that dude just won a couple titles. Do you pull her out? Do you boycott the whole thing? What would you advise parents to do if it's their baby girl who put in the work and now it's being destroyed?
Yeah, that's the impossible question. What do you do, right? It's tragic that the onus is placed on these young girls, that they're left in this decision. Do I not get on the podium? Do I not compete? Do I just go along with it? It's my last meet ever. And I think back to when I was in that position. Granted, it was 3 years ago, which was a very different climate back then. But I wasn't willing to not compete. Had I known, or had I not been so naive, I'll say, to the trajectory of where we were going at the time, I wouldn't have gotten in that pool that day. Because guess what? By me participating in the farce, I was just as guilty as the people, again, who were creating and enforcing these policies. It's a movement that we've dubbed Project Boycott, with emphasis on the word boy, of girls taking a stand, being willing to do the hard thing, right? But helping them understand also in the process, being able to provide the resources and guidance that some things matter more than victory. One of those things being the idea that there is reality, reality matters, that there is an objective truth, that your safety is more important than any sort of victory. We've talked to many girls in the sport of volleyball, and we've actually, there were five Mountain West Conference teams, NCAA Division I teams, that forfeited their game against San Jose State University last year, a team that had a man as their star player. So in that scenario, you have to worry about getting hit in the face with a volleyball coming at you 100 miles an hour. It's a situation that no girl wants to be in. But your question was specifically to the parents. Goodness gracious, parents, defend your kids. I have been, there's lots of fingers to point. You can point a finger at the NCAA. You can point a finger at the Biden administration for the regressive policies that ultimately allowed us to be where we are. But I think there's a finger that needs to be pointed back at the parents, especially actually the dads. Where in the world have you been? Defend your kids. I can't believe it even has to be said. I have parents who reach out to me all the time who say, "This is happening to my daughter. We live here in this school district, but I can't say anything because I work a corporate job. Can you do something about it?" And it breaks my heart when I get a message like this, because of course I will. It's what I built my platform on. It's what I care so deeply and so passionately about. I will do whatever I can, but do I have to care more about your kid than you do? So parents, defend your kids. They're in desperate, desperate need of it.
Riley, appreciate you. Come back soon. Let's talk to a former NFL player turned pastor. Next. I miss the NFL. I miss watching sports. I'm a dude. I grew up in Ohio and Montana watching sports with my buddies. We get home after practice and we turn on ESPN. I haven't turned on ESPN in ages. I miss being able to just watch athletes. We never cared what race, religion, we didn't care what their politics were. We just wanted to see these athletes perform. And that's all it used to be. And I try to explain this to my sons, that it didn't used to be like it is now. And that they look at me like I'm an alien from another planet. It's the only world they've ever known. It breaks my heart. Joining me now, Pastor Paul Blair, founder of Liberty Pastors Network and former NFL player. Pastor, I hate now that I have to tune into the NFL and in between pharmaceutical commercials, there's end racism painted in the. When did this happen? Why did this happen?
Well, sadly, we just let our guard down and it just eroded through the years. You know, when I was a ball player, whether it be in college or in the pros, hey, we weren't the Mexican Chicago Bears and the Black Chicago Bears and the White Chicago Bears. When we came out on the field, we all wore one uniform, one name on the front. We had different names on the back, but we were the Chicago Bears. And your ethnicity or your economic background made no difference. I mean, it's truly, in a way, a free market. Those guys that were the most talented at their particular position wound up earning a job. You had to be at your best every day in order to keep that job. And, you know, as a team, you wanted to put your best product on the field, but it was a team sport. You know, you were there to represent your city, you were there to represent your fans. And quite frankly, you're on the field there standing shoulder to shoulder with your teammates. And you just do anything in the world to try to, you know, make sure not let any of those down.
It changed because we let our guard down. And I agree with you on that, but what should we What should we have done? I watched it happen, and it was like it was almost all at once. And I know it wasn't all at once. I know that's naive, but it was like one day you woke up and the NFL was gay. And what did that happen? When did that happen? You don't know. It's like it came at us all at once, but it didn't, right?
If you look at the there were 45 points of the communist golden takeover America, and if you look at it, you know, this has been around for 60 plus years. And it wasn't by using bullets and overpowering us. They knew that couldn't happen. But it was to erode us morally and in our educational system. You know, our seminaries were infiltrated, and we now have pastors that are woke and, quite frankly, cowards. They aren't bulldog watchdogs of their flocks. And we had always gone to, we'd gone to public education. I was a product of public school system. But when I was in school, you know, we were taught facts. We were taught reading, writing, arithmetic, phonics, science. Most of us just assumed that that was still going on in the school system. However, you know, over the last 20, 30 years, they were stopping. They weren't educating our children. They were indoctrinating our children. And then you have a whole generation of people that are now adults that don't think rationally or don't think logically, have no critical thinking skills. You know, I never thought we'd be in an age where we had to define how many genders there were. I mean, that's been quite obvious for 6,000 years. It's obvious biologically. You're either XX or XY. You know, having been in many locker rooms and lived a life of 62 years, look, there's two genders, I can guarantee it. And for people that try to add to that, well, to those of us that are older, that's insane. Sadly, the younger generation has just accepted this insanity. We live in the Twilight Zone, and we're fighting to take it back.
Do you think, now I realize it's just the beginning, but do you think we are starting to take it back? And I ask that question for this reason, Pastor. I'm seeing more athletes openly, one, refuse the pride stuff, openly talk about Jesus. I don't even remember that from my youth. I'm seeing that pop up more and more now. Are we finally, have we reached the bottom for, pardon the pun?
I'm feeling too. And what's sad is, actually, it's sad for my generation, but encouraging for the future, because the Gen Z kids are far more conservative, and they have a greater draw to get back to orthodoxy in Christianity. You know, the seeker-friendly movement was one of the things that let Christianity down, quite frankly, fundamentally. But this youngest generation is more conservative than the baby boomers, of which I'm at the tail end of, and the millennials. And quite frankly, I think the left just overplayed their hand. You know, these last 5 or 6 or 7 years, I mean, we didn't go with an argument over, you know, even reasonable things. I mean, we stepped straight into the Twilight Zone. When you have people dressing up like animals and demanding that they be referred to as a furry or some sort of animal creature, and when we have parents taking their children into permanently altering their bodies physically and destroying them emotionally. That's something that was so outside the realm of possibility even 10, 12 years ago. You never even saw it coming. When Barack Obama, the first community organizer that I ever heard of, was elected president, everyone was very dogmatic that marriage was between one man and one woman. Even when he ran for re-election in 2012, he campaigned on the idea that marriage was one man and one woman. Of course, we know he was lying now looking back at it. But once that fell, once that domino fell, it seemed that everything else just has fallen very rapidly, a lot faster than I thought. And I think the young people have finally just reached a point where they've recognized how insane this is, and they're not going to put up with it anymore. Hopefully, the older generation will join them.
Yeah, no doubt. The young people might just end up saving us. Pastor, appreciate you very much, sir. Tony, man. He's not wrong. These young kids, I see it around my kids. And I know you're thinking it's because they're my kids. They're friends. I didn't raise those kids. Man, they are hardcore. I have some hope. When it comes to the next generation, I have some hope that they're waking up. Anyway, let's do final thoughts. Next. Culture war matters a lot. We are not an economic zone as a country. We are a nation. We should protect our culture. We're watching it right now all across the television set. Culture matters a lot. And when you let that go, when you ignore that aspect of it, you end up with a country full of animals who want to tear it apart. But we can get it back. We just have to fight for it. That's all it's going to take, fighting for it. All right, we'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast.